Welcome to the third United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten and I'm currently walking through Solna, which is a district of Stockholm, the capital of Sweden. Manchester United have been invited to play a friendly game here and obviously well remunerated for playing the game. United played a lot in Scandinavia in the 80s and 90s, but as United got bigger, they found that there weren't Scandinavian stadiums big enough to justify the match fees which United charged. So as recently as 1992, United played in front of 4,000 people in Molde, which is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's club. Now, United charge a lot of money, and to justify that, you need to fill a big stadium. The Friends Arena opened last year. It seats over 50,000 people, and if you've got 50,000 people paying good money for tickets, then you can afford to bring Manchester United over. It's a beautiful day in Stockholm. I've been walking around the capital today. You wouldn't believe how many fit... Sorry, I was getting distracted there. There's lots of very nice Swedish girls, as I'm sure you can imagine, but I didn't look, as I'm a happily married father of one. So I'm going to go to the stadium. I'm not even sure who's going to be on this podcast. I've got a few ideas of different people I intend to meet along the way. I've just spoken to some of the United fans who are here. There's about 50 have come over. And one of the Swedish hooligans came up to one of them and went, "Is this your firm?" And the lads he asked, they're not wet behind the ears, they are lads. And they would have been active many years ago. But now, you know, they're in the 50s, they've certainly not come over for a fight, they've come over for a drink. So hooliganism is one British export, which is still alive and well in Sweden. Although I've not been asked if I'm part of any firm yet. So I'm going to go towards the ground, get in the ground, and see how United do in their last pre-season friendly before the Community Shield. So I'm walking close to the ground and I saw music pumping out, Fuck the Police by Public Enemy. And it's a group of AIK ultras. They're all sort of gathering close to the ground, they're drinking, they're selling Against Modern Football t-shirts. You can see that they're all good mates with each other and that the fan culture is pretty strong. I'm with John. John, you're one of the AIK ultras. Can you tell us a little bit about the group?
My group's called Solna Invictus, and next year we're going to have our 10-year celebration. And basically, we make the big choreographies on the games, and we start the chants, and we're at the heart of our home stand. Yeah.
And do you go home and away games?
I try to go to every away game, and we're only 60 members, and we've sent a bus to each game so far.
So if you're playing in the south, or one of the teams in the south of Sweden, it's like 7 hours away.
Yeah.
How many fans of AIK would go to that game?
Well, we got Malmö coming up on Sunday, and probably we'll bring about 600, maybe more.
And how would you travel? Train, bus?
We travel by bus most of the time.
How long does it take to get to Malmö?
To Malmö, with the stops for smoking and stuff, we get a lot of those, and it takes about 9 hours.
Each way?
Yeah, each way.
So it's a long day?
Yeah, for sure.
Who are your main rivals? Who's the main rivalry within Stockholm?
Within Stockholm, the historical rival is Djurgården. Our clubs were created the same year, and since then we've had a strong rivalry with them. And we also have another team in Hammarby, which has a strong fan culture, and we got a strong rivalry with them in the stands and in the streets, but they've never really been a successful football club. So when it comes to sports, there's not really any rivalry.
When you say in the stands and on the streets, fighting?
Yeah, fighting, or they got a strong fan culture, so when we play each other, it's going to be a great atmosphere, and you always want to be louder, bigger, more fans, and stronger in any way.
I've seen pictures of recent Stockholm derbies and the atmosphere and the choreography. It's miles, miles better than you get in England now.
Yeah.
And yet, I can see that you're influenced by what's going on in England. You're wearing a Stand Against Modern Football t-shirt.
Yeah.
Most British people would really admire what you've become and are quite regretful of what's happened in England, with Premier League grounds being pretty sterile places most of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Both from politician side and from fan side, we all like to see, look at England and see what happened there, you know, because we think it's disastrous. You know, our fan culture grew up, started during the 80s, as influenced by English supporters, you know, and to see what became of it is it's horrible, you know, and that's why we the politicians, they try to look at that as a way to stop football violence and stuff. They always say, like, yeah, we should take a look at what happened in England, you know, how they solved the problem, and we're trying to avoid it, basically. And that's one of the reasons we're out here right now. All the organized supporters groups and for AIK decided to boycott this game because we don't really like the idea of Manchester United, a rich club owned by a private person, coming here, playing a home game in our stadium and setting ticket prices are six times as high as we pay for normal games. Yeah.
I think most Manchester United match-going fans would agree with you, yeah, and would be sympathetic to you. I can remember being in Norway 20 years ago on a pre-season tour and picking up a magazine, and I couldn't read Norwegian, but it said the best atmospheres in Europe, and number one was Old Trafford, Manchester. Yeah. And as a kid, I was so proud of that. That was the club from my city.
Yeah.
And now, that's just so far from the truth that it's a bit embarrassing when people come, and to the other big stadiums, you know, and even in Europe, Camp Nou, the Bernabeu, they're not very good. Italy's good, Greece is good, Turkey's good, and it's good here as well.
Yeah, most games. Today it won't be that good, but I know a bit about the history, you know, I know about the infamous stands in England, you know, and it's not the same anymore. You know.
So what do you pay for a ticket normally, and what they're asking for tonight?
Normally we pay about 15 euros, what's that, 12 pounds maybe, and today they took about 50 euros, I think, but lately they've dropped the prices because they noticed that people weren't buying the tickets, you know, so the stadium will be only filled halfway.
So you'd see Manchester United as this big corporate beast coming into Stockholm, playing a game, and it just doesn't seem right.
Basically, yeah. We would be more sympathetic if this was not during our main... We got our season going on right now. We're second in the league, 2 points behind, and we played one of our top rivals on Sunday, and we're going to play another one on this Sunday, next Sunday. And they squeeze in this match, and it just seems stupid to me.
It's just all about the money.
Yeah.
It's a sellout.
Yeah. Yeah, we sold our club to Manchester, our club and our stadium to Manchester United. And I don't have anything personal against Manchester United. In fact, it was my favorite team as a kid, but it's just not the same club for me anymore, you know.
You know, you see Manchester United as this rich club. Manchester's not a rich city. A lot of the people who go to games, they're not rich. Just because the team they follow is rich, it doesn't make the people rich. And they're frustrated when they go to away games and other teams raise the prices. And they say, well, you're Man United. But they're like, well, I'm just a normal person from Manchester who supports my local team. Just happens to be Manchester United. And we've been getting discrimination like that for years. Manchester City have started getting it now.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, £62 to go to Arsenal. We're saying we've had that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And the authorities should be doing something about it.
Yeah.
Immediately after the game in Sweden, I spoke briefly to Danny Welbeck and asked him to describe what it was like scoring for Manchester United in the Bernabeu last season.
Obviously there's loads of Manx in the crowd and lots of Man United supporters, and we all knew where it was sectioned off for them. And the corner, obviously we got given the corner kick, and once it came in, I was on the keeper, and Ramos was in between us, and I just remember like giving them a little nudge to make some space for myself, and obviously just guided into the far corner of the net, and it was just a rush of blood, and the adrenaline rush was unbelievable, and the whole section of United fans went wild, and it was just a massive buzz, and it was on a special night as well.
Did you think before the game, Bernabeu, which is brilliant?
Yeah, it was a massive buzz. It wasn't something where I thought, oh, I'll score tonight and it's going to be like massive. It was just went out on the pitch and just got to do your own stuff, play the game, not the occasion. It was one of them moments and I was happy to
brilliant
score.
Stadium.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Hisser about what happened at the
yeah, track. It was something that really got to the lads. Obviously, everyone was very downhearted. The club felt like, I don't know, it just felt so unlucky, like how it all ended. And the team pretty much felt in control, like throughout the game, was playing well. And then obviously the red card, it's a bit unfortunate for us.
I'm walking back from the stadium to Solna station. It's late, it's dark, there's nobody about. I've done this from many stadiums over the years. Often after working as finishing as a journalist and finding my way back into town to meet up with mates of mine who've come and watch United, and some pretty air-raising moments. Other times when it's not been United games, sometimes football grounds aren't located in the best places. I remember a couple of years ago when Montpellier won the French League, I tried to get back into the town and their ground's right by the side of a really rough estate, and this policeman just came up to me and said, you just shouldn't be here, it's just not safe for you. I said, what are you going to do? And he said, well, this man here will sort you out. And I got in a car with a fella who wanted like €20 to take me back into town, but he seemed dodgier than the people the police were potentially describing. And I thought, have I been set up here by some black copper? And the guy driving me, he's just speaking in really fast French and I couldn't understand him. And I just kept saying, look, just take me to this one place. It was all right in the end. I've had a few dodgy taxis. A few years ago I went to Israel to do a feature on a derby game in Tel Aviv, and I was going to meet Tel Aviv's ultras. It was Saturday, 5 p.m. and I flagged a taxi down in Tel Aviv and I told the taxi driver where I wanted to go, and he said, no, I'm not taking you there. And I said, why? He said, because they're shit, something like that. In he had a problem with Hapoel Tel Aviv because he said proudly that he was a fan of Beitar Jerusalem. So I got out my card and said, well, I'm here to write about football. I've come for the game tomorrow. I was just going to go and meet their ultras the day before. He said, well, come with me in the car. I said, all right, I will do. I said, I was going to be his last job. I said, but I'm not paying for a taxi to Jerusalem, which would have been about £100. I said, I'll give you £20, take me there and back, if you're going anyway. And he demanded the money up front. And then he drove me towards the West Bank and towards Jerusalem. And then he kept putting songs on, saying, oh, this is a song in memory of one of our former presidents who was killed by a suicide bomber. And it got a little bit hairy, and I don't usually have a handler when I travel, but in Israel I needed someone who could just tell me who to avoid, where to go, where not to go. And I rang him and I said, just have a word with this taxi driver for me, please. And the taxi driver calmed down a bit, but he was a bit wired, he was a bit mental. He dropped me off at the game, did one, not that he was obliged to stand with me, and then met me afterwards and started driving me back towards Tel Aviv, as we agreed. And he was saying, do you want some cocaine? Do you want some girls? Cocaine, girls. No, thank you. Just take me back to Tel Aviv. No, I introduce you to a beautiful girl. I'm all right, thanks, mate. Good drugs. No, thank you, mate. Come on, it's only a small bit out the way. 20 minutes later, we're at his sister-in-law's house, and I'm being introduced to somebody and being all polite and thinking, what on earth am I doing here? So I wrote all about this. I was doing it for 442 magazine. And it came out and got back to Israel. And there was a story in the paper saying, English writer abducted by unlicensed taxi driver. A bit of an adventure. So now I'm walking back to Solna. I'm going to get a train back into the centre of Stockholm and meet up with Bojan Djordjic, who's boy about town in Stockholm. I saw him before, all the United players knew him, even though they didn't play with him. He's got a big personality and he's a great lad. Known him since he played at United. I've got a lot of time for him. He's just got such a infectious personality and a love for life, and he's had so many ups and downs, and he just takes them all as they come. The game tonight, United drew 1-1. Disappointing, bit of a nothing affair. What, a pre-season game, is that a cliche? It's also true. United's goal was very, very good. Pass from Carrick out to Zaha, who I thought did well throughout, low-balling to Angelo Henriquez to score his first goal for United, the Chilean teenage striker, who did very well at Wigan. He wasn't chosen ahead of Kone, but he impressed people there. They knew he was quality. They just weren't quite prepared to start him in the Premier League at 18. And I don't think he'd be starting for Manchester United either. I think that it was a pre-season. We saw Bebe tonight. We also saw Anderson playing 90 minutes. I've said that sentence a couple of times now. He's done well, and I'm told that the manager, David Moyes, really likes him and feels that he's getting fitter and that he's a very good player. So that'll be interesting to see how he's used, especially if an attacking midfielder doesn't come in. Well, I understand moves are underfoot for that to happen. I could have said that at any point over the last month. So there's Rio Ferdinand's testimonial on Friday, and then it's the Community Shield against Wigan. I'm told that Wigan have sold 3,000 tickets by someone at Manchester United because it clashes in with a big Wigan Warriors game. I'll have to check that out, so by the time you listen to this, that might be nonsense. But United have sold 42,000 tickets so far, and that will make it the biggest ever away following in United's history. Now, we got 38,000 for Barcelona, and I would imagine people would argue that Wembley in 68 was all United, but in terms of official allocation, I don't think there's been a bigger one than for how many people will be at Wembley on Sunday. So I'm going to meet Bojan, I'm going to meet a couple of other people on the podcast, and then I'm going to head back to Manchester.
My name is Janne Jura, and I'm from Stockholm, Sweden.
So we're on the train station at Solna. It's about an hour after Manchester United have finished. How long have you been a United fan?
Oh, about, I think, 25 years or so.
And what made you support United 25 years ago?
It was actually a video game called Manchester United Football. It was when I started playing computer games, and it was the first football game I played. I just stuck to United from that.
And when you say stick to United, have you been to Old Trafford?
No, but we have been discussing that, and we are actually planning on going there this year. So hopefully it will be.
So how do you watch Manchester United games?
Yeah, I watch all the games on TV.
And is it easy now in Sweden compared to how it used to be?
Yeah, it's. We have always had English football in Sweden. It's quite big here. So, yeah, I have the correct channels for it, so I can watch every game.
Which other clubs are popular in Stockholm? And what the fans of Swedish teams say when you support United rather than AIK or Hammarby or Djurgården?
Well, it's completely okay to have an English team to support. It's completely different to have Swedish and English teams. I'm not really that interested in the Swedish football because it's much lower pace and so on. But English football is popular in general. I think United is probably the biggest team here in Sweden. And then we have a lot of supporters for Arsenal and Liverpool as well. And those are pretty much the big three teams.
And do you ever watch Swedish football, or not really?
No, not me, but maybe a lot of other people do.
How are you feeling about United? What did you make of the game tonight?
I was a bit disappointed with their attitude. I think they didn't really start playing until in the second half. I would have wanted to see some more changes, but I guess they wanted to have 90 minutes on all of the players. So, yeah, I can understand it's still just preparation, but since it's only a week away from the actual league, so I thought they would be more prepared than they were.
I spoke to some AIK fans before the game, and they were boycotting because of ticket prices.
Yeah, I heard that they were only... they didn't get any revenue from the game. It was all going to United, so I think it's just silly. I think we should all just enjoy the game. It's not that often that United come here.
How do you think United will do this season?
I'm a bit afraid if they don't get any new recruitment. I wish we would get some more central midfielders. So
more than one or one?
At least one big signing we need.
Who would you like to see?
I don't know. Like Schweinsteiger type of midfielder would be good.
So I'm in Stockholm the night after the game, and with Bojan Djordjic, who's a former guest on United We Stand podcast, and you're in your home city.
Yeah, it feels good to be home after many years abroad as well, so it's a nice feeling.
And you're playing here, you're playing in the top flight still, age 31.
I could play here in a top flight till I'm age 41 as well, Andy, if you want me to, but it feels good to be back to the club I came to United from. It's my boys' team, a big youth organisation with around 264 youth teams, so I'm one of the oldest ones on the team, and it feels really good about it.
264 teams?
265 teams in the youth organisation. It makes us the biggest club in Europe.
And we've just turned up to a pub to see.
I think it's actually closed.
Closed. Which is not good, which is not what we wanted.
Nope.
At all. Let's just stop this a second. Right, we're back in a cab now. We found out where the United fans are, and the closed pub is not going to hold us back too far. What did you make of United, Bojan, tonight against AIK, one of your former clubs now?
Of course, it's one of the clubs I supported when I was younger as well, and it was nice to see them over in Stockholm. I know it was a bad timing maybe for AIK to have the game, because just in the middle of the season, they're 2 points off the top, and they had two tough games before this, and they have another tough game against Malmö on Sunday. I thought the performance, you could see that the lads were a bit worn down. I think when I spoke to Nemanja Vidic as well, he told me that they worked really hard during the pre-season, and I think you can see that. But also you can also see that the clubs in Sweden, the football in Sweden, has improved over the years. Like I said on MUTV when I was on there 20 years ago, you would actually think how many goals would United score here, 7 or 8. But everybody develops. It's tough going anywhere else to play football, because everybody can run now these days for 90 minutes. And AIK had some quality, and I thought they were on even terms with United during the first 60 minutes, to be honest.
AIK are one of the biggest clubs in Sweden. What would their main players be on? Because they had a lot of non-Swedish players.
Of course, they're non-Swedish, but they're like non-Swedish as me. We're Swedish citizen, but yeah. We have different backgrounds. I'm Serbian, but I have a Swedish passport. Same with a lot of the players people saw tonight, like Martin Mutumba. He's from Uganda, but he holds a Swedish passport. Henna Goitom from Eritrea, but he's Swedish as well. So there's a new breed of Swedish people we get here, the new generation, as I call it. The thing is, as well, as you went into it before, that you shouldn't take so much notice from the 1-1 draw against a team as AIK. United are still in the pre-season. There's still a few weeks left for the opening game. But also, it was a good test. It was nice to see Vidic playing 90 minutes, because he needs it before the opener against Swansea away.
You're friends with Nemanja. What's he like as a person?
He's as humble as he gets. He's down to earth, always been, always remains, and I'm still impressed to see a world-class player as him being as good to everybody else around him. He just leads the team by an example. He's a great captain, and he's an even better guy on the outside of the pitch.
Tell us some stories about him when you played in Belgrade with him. What type of personality was he like? What did he do?
He used to put his head when you wouldn't put your feet in, you know. He used to sort the young players out.
What way?
In a way that they could never fly high enough before he took them down to the ground, because he made them realize the hard work pays off. Even if you have talent, you should be hard work, you know. Maybe I should sometimes listen to him instead of just wave him off. By the time, we still remain good friends, and we are totally different characters and different people, but we respect each other for that, and that's because we get on, you know. I think honesty is the way forward in life.
What's he like off the pitch?
He's nice and quiet. He's different on the pitch, because he can be nasty with his elbows sometimes. He's a family man. He loves his family, takes always good care of them, but also knows who his real friends are and never forgets them. Doesn't matter what they do. If they even work on a McDonald's drive-thru or they're world-class singers, doesn't matter. They're still the same to Nemanja. He always looks at a human being first, and then what you do.
You've seen a bit of United pre-season. How do you think United are going to do this year?
For me, are the favourites. Everybody that wins the league the year before, they're going to be the strong favourites to win it again. Chelsea are going to be strong, City are going to be strong, but I believe in United. United are a club that's showing you they don't need the world-class players on every position to make a good team. So I would say my money is United again, even if some people doubt it and some people think that we need big-name players, but you only need players that are going to improve your squad, nothing else.
I'm in Hale with Eric Steele, former Manchester United goalkeeping coach. We've just had a wonderful two-hour chat. It's an interview for the first United We Stand of the season. And Eric was fascinating, talking about David De Gea, the various goalkeepers he's worked with, Edwin van der Sar, Peter Schmeichel when he was at Aston Villa, and Eric had a great career himself. Welcome, Eric.
Good to see you.
When did you first spot David De Gea?
He was playing for Spain under-17s against England under-17s in the final of the Euros in 2007. Spain won the game 1-0. And he did two or three things in that game. I had no need to buy or look at a potential goalkeeper because we had Joe Hart at Manchester City.
You were at Manchester City at the time.
Yeah, so I had Isaacson, Hart, Schmeichel, Kasper Schmeichel. But he just did two or three things in there that I made a quick diary note, like this guy, future reference, must be looking at him, see how he progresses, see what he's got within the locker. And that's really where it started. I actually looked at him then and I just kept a diary note and looked to move on from there.
So when Edwin van der Sar was coming towards the end of his career at Manchester United, Sir Alex Ferguson asked you to recommend De Gea was always at the forefront of your mind because what you'd seen.
Well, he was there straight away because on the background they already had, you had to start looking at where are the best goalkeepers in Europe. Do we look at South America? Do we want to bring South America? So predominantly we were going to be English or European based. To do that, we then start to look. Inevitably, you start looking within Spain. You can look at Casillas, you look at the Valdes. But then straight away I looked and recognised De Gea. I'd watched his progress. I'd seen him play in the 19s. By now I'm really looking in a big serious manner. And that's what happened. Off I went. Manager went and saw him. Jim Lawler got all the European scouts. So I was getting reports coming back in, and that's what I did. I went and saw the Neuers, the Lloris's, and Davids. And in the end, manager went and saw, Rennie had seen, Mick had seen, and it was a staff decision. Obviously, manager makes the final decision that David would be our new number one.
And all the feedback coming back was largely positive about David.
Well, it was, but the one thing that inevitably came back more to my doorstep was the fact that his age, would that be a problem?
19. But he wasn't playing for a pub team, he was playing for the Europa League winners. Yeah. He was playing with Aguero, he was playing with Forlan, he was playing in front of 55,000.
And the real, I have to say, the one moment that turned it for me was the semi-final first leg at Liverpool. And in the first 20 minutes, he's at the cop end. After 35 seconds, he's got a one-on-one with Dirk Kuyt. And he stands up, makes a save. Ball goes over the bar. Ball comes in, corner. He gets absolutely smashed by Jamie Carragher, but punches at 30 yards. This is the first 5 minutes in front of the cop. I could have walked out then. That was my mind made up. If he can do that at the cop end, at 19 years of age, he can handle playing at Manchester United. So the mental side that everybody would say is young, he was way ahead of his time in terms of being 19, chronologically aged. For me, there was enough mental strength and composure, mental and physical bravery to do what he did on that night. That was for me. I came back and I said to the manager, my mind's made up for these reasons. And then obviously manager makes the final decision. He had to obviously speak to the Glazers and say, look, we need to invest in a young goalkeeper. The rest is history.
Two things there. I've spoken to scouts who you know very well, and they said when they're looking at potential Manchester United players, they say, can he do it at Liverpool away? That's one thing they look at.
Yep.
So when they're watching Shinji Kagawa, is Martin Ferguson maybe watching him at Duisburg away?
Correct.
Bremen away.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking and thinking, can he do it at Liverpool away? It's really interesting that you've seen De Gea do it at Liverpool away, but playing for Atletico Madrid.
Exactly.
The second thing is that game, Diego Forlan, when he walked out on the pitch at Anfield, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this on a Manchester United podcast, but Diego's told me the story several times now. The whole cop were booing him. They had a flag suggesting that he looked like a woman. They were singing songs about him. And he was unplayable. He had a great game.
Right.
And to be fair to him, when they knocked Liverpool out of the cup, they applauded Diego falling off the field.
In the second leg. They did, yeah.
Fair play.
It was fair play, but again, he's gone in. He's gone in at the cauldron, hasn't he? and he's reacted. Now people sometimes either go, there's two ways you go. You either savour that, relish it, and that's what you've got to do. That's what goalkeepers have to do if you go to Old Trafford. You've got to relish playing in front of 76,000. You've got to handle that. Part of your job is to communicate, but they won't hear you. What are you going to do? You've got to take that on a different way. You've got to be more visual. You've got to give sign language virtually. But you've got to have that within. But then you've got to be, as we said on part of the other interviews, he's got to be the calmest man on the field. And that night at Liverpool, you would never have said he was 19. A bit like when I'd seen him when he was 17. You wouldn't have believed that was a 17-year-old. So I looked and went, yes, he might look a baby, but there was certainly a man within inside that physical frame. You know the work that we've had to do at Manchester United to get him up to that physical frame. He'll be a better goalkeeper now for coming in at 71 kilos. He's now 82. And if he's looked after himself in the summer, he'll come back 82. And he's only going to get better. Look what Edwin did. Edwin retired at 40. This guy's 22. He's come up with 200 games. He's a winner. That's deep down. He's got that mental strength that you have to have to A, play in goal, and B, play for Manchester United.
We spoke a lot in the main interview about David and about Edwin. Do you think David has that mental strength?
Definitely. No problem. No doubt about it. For him to come through what he had the first 6 months, adapting to life, you think what he did, he came off the back of... We signed him the day after he'd won the Euros, 2 years ago. He then went off and had a 2.5-week holiday, came back into Seattle, never met the group. Doesn't speak the language. Met Patrice Evra, who was great, helped him. Spoke the language, got him involved with the boys. He had 4 days, sessions with me in the heat. He then made his debut in Chicago on 102 degrees. Made saves in the first half, one which people still say, with his feet. It's a trademark Spanish goalkeeping asset. They work at that, and David's very good at it. Am I bothered that he makes the save as he did in Madrid when he virtually does a Jackie Chan? Am I bothered? Did it go in? Manager got the stage, why is he using his feet? Manager got the stage where he looked and went, I ain't bothered. If that's the save he makes it. Schmeichel was an orthodox. Edwin was very much, could be an orthodox because of his height, language, style, because of them long arms. So they all have different traits. But in the end, you look and go, that physical presence that he should have now, added to the mental strength, he should go on and be better and better and better.
Describe him as a person, David.
I think he's a deep thinker. I think he's definitely a Spaniard working in a foreign country, but I think he's adapted really well. And I think what he has done, he's got he's humble, which I think most great players are. You speak to some of the greats, you've done it. Manchester United have had greats. I think there's a humility about David. He doesn't want to broadcast what he's done. He just wants to come in the next day, train, go home, be with his family, see his girlfriend when she comes from Barcelona, whatever. And I think that humility is a great thing that he's got. But he also now realises the history of the club.
Why is Spain producing so many good goalkeepers at the moment? Four of the best 10 in the world are Spaniards, as well as outfield players.
Well, I think it comes round in circles. I mean, I've been and watched. I've admired what I've seen when I've been to Madrid. They certainly get the kids at an early age. I think the one thing they do is they play outfield very early in their careers. You know, David, when he went to Madrid, Atletico Madrid, when he was 8, he learnt more about with the feet than in the hands, which is an important asset.
Victor Valdez, he's got himself down as a bit of a player.
Yeah.
And we did an interview with him for 442 a few months ago. And he said, in all seriousness, he approached Guardiola in a pre-season friendly and said, can I play central midfield? And Guardiola, he didn't knock it back straight away. He thought about it because he knows that he can play. Have you seen David play outfield?
Actually, in fact, we always, and again, it was the ethos of the club, the way they want to play was that he would play out. He played in possession sessions. He's actually never played out. And asking that, I've never seen him play out properly in a six or an eight aside.
Or Edwin?
Edwin, yeah. I've seen Edwin play that. Yeah, no problem.
Good player?
Yeah, because he didn't play in goal. He was 15. Now, David, when we do the possession sessions, he can handle that ball really well at his feet, as you've seen. But it's like I've said before, we're going to go back to it. I've seen a lot of people be terrific Monday to Friday. But what they're going to do when that ball comes back at Old Trafford, there's 76,000 people bellowing. You've seen what David's got. Even if he's made an error, the next ball comes in, he'll take it away, he'll clip Patrice Evra, or he'll hit the ball long. He's got that composure, that confidence to do it. But you've got to be able to do that in the pressure situations, in every asset of the goalkeeper. So every asset he's got in terms of his shot stopping, he's going to improve, he's going to get stronger, he's going to definitely develop in terms of his spring, and the more strength he gets, the more power he gets, he still needs to work. There's nowhere near the finish article. We're back to it earlier. Joe Hart isn't the finish article at 25. David De Gea is nowhere near. Peter came at 28, so he's got 6 years on Peter. So where's David going to be if he continues to work, continue to develop, and to continue to believe? And I'm sure the management staff will have the same belief. As long as the management staff have faith and they work with them, you've got a goalkeeper for the next 18 years at Manchester United.
I'm going to transcribe. We've spoke for 2 hours. That was just a 10-minute part of it. So it's been lovely chatting to you. And good luck. What are you thinking for the future?
Decisions aren't made yet. I've got to decide to be done in the next 2-3 days whether I actually go self-employed. I've just spent a month working in America. I've had various offers to do things all over Europe and the world, which I think I might do. Because where do you go as a club after Manchester United?
It's not a bad thing to have on your CV, though, is it?
No, it's a fantastic thing to have, you know, and I'm very proud and honoured in terms of what I've done playing and coaching. But this might be a time for me just to step back a little bit, enjoy a year out of full-time, and still do work with the FA. I've been offered work with the Premier League, I've been offered work with the Nike Academy. So in the next 3 or 4 days, I'll make my mind up. The season's obviously already started. But I think very much I'll still be involved in football, because at the end of it, that's what I'm about. I've still got a lot to offer. But I think I might just do it at my pace as opposed to the pace of the great machine that I've just left.
In terms of highlights in your 6 years at United, just pick out one moment, finally. Just one moment where you thought, this is absolutely wonderful. Maybe it was a goal. Maybe it was a key goal. Maybe it was a progress in a goalkeeper. Maybe it was Cristiano Ronaldo scoring or Ryan Giggs doing something.
I've got it for you. It was one morning training, my first year, and I'd already been warned that you'll see things in training that will amaze you. And it was a possession session that was going on, and I just absolutely stood back, and I think my mouth was open, and it was involving Giggs, and it was involving Scholes, and it was involving Ronaldo and Rooney. And they were on opposite sides, and just some of the touches in that 10-minute session were sublime. And then at the end of that session, Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne came over, and they wanted extra finishing. And I wish to this day I'd videoed it, because some of the things that they did with the ball, with Edwin van der Sar and Ben Foster in goal, if I'd videoed it, I would have been shown it over and over again. I just looked and went, I've never had this quality ever.
What were they doing?
They were actually doing different finishing practices, and then Cristiano wanted to do some free kicks as he does at the end, and it actually spun it round. It gave people like Edwin and Ben an opportunity to say, crack it, how do we deal with this? So that we actually changed certain techniques based on what Cristiano did, because I still to this day, how can I reproduce what Cristiano did? Wayne hit the ball in a different way, but that actual 20-minute session, I realised, wow, I'm at the biggest club with some of the best players in the world. I haven't seen the Giggs and Scholes within that, but then it finished with Edwin and Ben defending against Rooney and Ronaldo. I've made it. So that's it for this podcast. I'm going to go and watch a young United side play at Ramsbottom in Lancashire tonight. It's one of the most picturesque football grounds in Lancashire, and it's Rio's testimonial in the Community Shield. Just been told that Cesc Fabregas, that United are not going to push anymore for Cesc Fabregas. Find it personally very frustrating, because I would have liked to have seen him come to Old Trafford. I think he's a very good player, he's at a good age. And I put hours and hours into that story in the last month, meeting people, phone calls, meeting people, and getting good information from reliable people. Manchester United were under the impression that Fabregas was amenable to moving to Old Trafford. I sense maybe Fabregas has played United against his own desires at Barcelona. But still, I was told that if United put a bid in of over $40 million for Fabregas, then the Barcelona president would be up for selling him. The third bid never arrived from United. I have no idea why. It's a bit of a strange one. So here we are, a couple of days before the season starts, and David Moyes hasn't signed a single player yet. And I think that's frustrating for several reasons. One, fans like to see new players. Two, I think it's about making an impression. David Moyes coming in, proving that he can attract a top player. Three, the other players. I think I was told that when Robin van Persie walked into the Old Trafford dressing room last year, that
other players looked at him and their reaction said, wow, they were really impressed. Because this wasn't a young lad being promoted from the youth team. It wasn't a middle-of-the-ranked player. It was a top, top player who'd come on top money. And good players like to play with good players. And I think United need that at the moment. I'm not the manager. Don't pick the team. Just pure fan opinion. And I've seen a lot of positives pre-season. I've travelled around Japan, Hong Kong and Sweden. I've seen loads of encouraging signs with the younger United players, with players who are fit and playing better, like Anderson, Kagawa, who had a okay first season but was injury hit. They expect him to improve in the second season. So there are positives, but the feeling among a lot of fans is, why haven't we signed anybody? And will we sign somebody? And I think it's too early to make a judgment because the transfer window hasn't closed and United have left it very late in the past to buy players in the August transfer window. But everybody will be watching with slightly cynical, tired eyes as the month draws to a close. But as we stand, we're still closer to the start of August than the end of August. So we shall just wait and see. There's not a lot more that we can do. We're working on the next United Week Stand. It comes out against Chelsea. It's the first one of the season. The 10 minutes you just listened to with Eric is only a small taster. I thought he was a fantastic person to interview and he gave us loads of real good insight into the goalkeepers that he's worked with and into Manchester United, key moments in the last few years, because he was there. He was in the dressing room. He was saying what the mood was like after Barcelona had beaten United in Rome in 2009 and at Wembley in 2011. And I'm going to stop mentioning Barcelona because it seems to be the source of nothing but bad news in relation to Manchester United at the moment. So the next podcast will be next week. We're going to record it on the coach down to Wembley with a load of regulars on the monkey bus. That's the plan anyway. And then just see who we stumble across along the way. Until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye.